Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Edward Kleinbart, who's a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. His work focuses on the taxation of capital income, international tax issues, and the political economy of taxation, including the intersection of tax policy and contemporary politics. Before joining USC Law, he served as chief of staff of the United States Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and he has an article in Thursday's New York Times, The Debt Ceiling's Escape Hatch. Welcome to Background Briefing, Edward Kleinbart.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And I imagine somebody at the White House has noticed your op-ed in Thursday's New York Times. You're throwing them a lifeline, aren't you?
Well, that's exactly what I'm trying to do. You know, I've sat patiently by my phone, but the president didn't call today. I hope somebody there read it. You know, what I'm trying to do is exactly that, is to throw him a lifeline that enables the president to defang the threat of the sort of extortionate demands that have been suggested will be made to avoid the debt ceiling, and to do so in a way that won't pile a constitutional crisis on top of a fiscal crisis.
Well, we've had some pretty wild suggestions, like the trillion-dollar platinum coin, and also the 14th Amendment route. So let's just shoot those two down quickly, if you will.
well, sure. So the 14th Amendment route it relies on the fact that Section 4 of the 14th Amendment says that no one will do anything to question the validity of the federal debt. And the argument is that Congress itself has questioned the validity of the federal debt by creating the debt ceiling, and so the president can simply ignore the federal legislation in the form of the debt ceiling law because the 14th Amendment commands him to. And you know, that's just not right. And Larry Lawrence Tribe at Harvard, you know, wrote a very good op-ed in the New York Times a year ago. You know, the point is a straightforward one. The Constitution is very clear that investing in Congress alone the authority to control the borrowing capacity of the United States, and the idea that the president can simply ignore that and borrow as much as he pleases really just flies in the face of the Constitution. And the funny thing is, the platinum coin has a lot of the same problems. You know, the platinum coin idea is that we have, again, a very elaborate statutory framework based on a constitution. Congress alone can regulate the money supply of the United States, can coin the money. Congress has done so. We have elaborate statutes that actually tell the Treasury how many dollar bills they can print and the like. And somewhere, you know, way in the middle of this, there's one little paragraph that says, and Treasury can issue platinum coins. And it's very clear from the history and the context that that was intended to enable Treasury to do simple commemorative coins, not to issue coins, platinum coins that you and I would spend at the 7-Eleven. And so what people have done is said that because Congress didn't think to say, and you can't issue $1 trillion of these, that therefore Congress has in effect surrendered all control over the money supply, which again the Constitution vests solely in the Congress, to the Treasury, and the Treasury can effectively create as much money as it wants by creating little platinum coins and depositing them at the Federal Reserve. You know, it's fantastical on its face, and it's a grave constitutional affront to the Congress, and it's not a good idea to pile a constitutional crisis on top of what would be a fiscal crisis. We have enough problems in this country.
And I guess the bottom line here, Ed Kleinbart, is that it would invite suits to before the Supreme Court, and even the Congress would probably call for impeachment, wouldn't they?
Well, you know, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to.
Give many ideas.
I don't want to give them any ideas, but I think the House of Representatives would view it as, you know, a direct affront to the Constitution, and the kind of argument that if you were to make in a first year law class at law school, you know, you would be derided by the professor for completely misconstruing the statute and having no understanding of how statutory interpretation is going to work. And the people who are promoting it are sophisticated legal scholars, but I believe they're doing so because they're desperate. They're desperate for a way to give the president some negotiating leverage. But I don't think it's a good idea to do that in a way that exposes him to this kind of perfectly, you know, non-trivial constitutional controversy.
Again, I'm speaking with Edward Kleinbart. He's a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. Before joining USC Law, he served as chief of staff of the U.S. Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation and has an article in Thursday's New York Times, "The Debt Ceiling's Escape Hatch." Let's then turn to your solution that you're offering the president in the event that the Republican Congress decides to go to the mat and have another debt ceiling crisis as they did last time. And the last one, by the way, cause the U.S. To be downgraded by Standard & Poor's, Moody's, I believe. And, of course, that would add that those deficit hawks that brought that about ended up adding to the deficit because they raised the cost of our debt. This time around, they can do some serious damage. And so clearly anything to avoid this, and the president has basically laid down a marker saying he's not going to negotiate over this. Last time he sort of got suckered into the negotiations. This time he's laying down a real red line there. So given that we're heading to another showdown here inexorably, Ed Kleinbart, tell us about your solution of federal script.
My solution, just to understand, is a terrible idea. It just happens to have the advantage of being the least awful idea going around to enable the president to, as I say, defang the most extortionate demands of one party in Congress. And the idea is a very simple one, and it's one that's going to be familiar to a lot of readers, a lot of listeners in California, because it was inspired in part by the California experience in 2009. And, you know, the great thing about living here in California now is it's a little, sort of like a little natural experiment in how to deal with dysfunctional legislatures. So, you know, we have a lot of expertise here. And the idea, very simply, is that that the government has lots and lots of bills. Some of them are in the form of Treasury debt obligations, treasury bills in the technical sense, short-term debt obligations, bills, notes, and bonds. Those are classic debt obligations. Those continue to get paid in cash. Those are when people think about treasury securities. That's what's relevant. But the government has lots and lots of other obligations other than those classic debt instruments. It has to pay the electric bill. It has to pay its vendors. It has to pay its employees. It's made promises to Social Security beneficiaries, and on and on and on. And so the idea is for those federal obligations that are not debt instruments, to pay the electric bill, to pay vendors, to pay defense contractors, even if they decide to pay Social Security beneficiaries, part of the payment would take the form of scrip, what in California was called a registered warrant, and what we all know as IOUs. And what the IOU would say is, yes, we owe you the money, and no, we can't pay you right now. Sorry. And when we can pay you, then we'll pay you. So the instrument itself is just evidencing a financial obligation, which itself is not a debt instrument, and the IOU does not create a debt instrument, so we don't have a debt ceiling problem. And then, unlike the platinum coin idea, we don't have to go to the Fed and enlist their help as a co-conspirator. Then we rely on the private markets, which is what happened in California. And if you get this script and you need cash today, you sell it. You sell it to the bank. You know, you sell it to a securities dealer. And because everyone knows that the crisis will be resolved in a few weeks, the banks are going to pay very close to par. They're not going to pay par because in my construction, the instruments don't bear interest. But they'll pay very close to par because they're going to get a terrific return compared to any other kind of treasury instrument that they could possibly buy. Instead of getting 1% a year, they'll get 1% in a month. So you'll be able to monetize your investment, but not by the Treasury issuing $1 trillion of money or $1 trillion of new securities, but rather by the private markets doing that. And in that way, I've substantially reduced the constitutional controversy, and I get almost all the cash into the pockets of people who need cash immediately. And for those reasons, I think it's a superior solution.
And it's a solution that, as you point out, has already been tried, tested, and it worked in California in 2009 when California had its budget crisis and it issued 450,000 registered warrants, scrip, in other words, totaling $2.6 billion. How does that compare? I mean, the only scrip that I recall, not that I was around at the time, but in World War II, soldiers were paid in scrip. Is that the same thing?
I don't know the World War II experience.
But the government's issued scrip before, in other words.
Well, the federal government has not issued scrip like this in 100 years or more, to my knowledge.
Right.
I'm not suggesting it's something that the federal government has done before, because the federal government has never run out of money before. The difference between this and other experiences is...
Well, it's not running out of money in a month or so, at any rate. It's just the politicians some politicians have decided to make an issue, an ideological issue, out of something that's been a longstanding mechanism, the debt ceiling.
That's absolutely right. And it's critically important that people understand that the debt ceiling, to understand two points. The first, the president does not control spending. The Congress alone determines the spending of the U.S. government, just as Congress alone determines the money supply and the borrowing of the U.S. government. So this is a problem of congressional Republicans versus congressional Democrats, to a large extent, in which the Republican Party, unfortunately, has decided to try and strong-arm its way of thinking instead of doing it through the regular order of debate, which we would have in a couple of months anyway, when the fiscal year 2014 budget comes up for debate in March.
Well, there you have it. I mean, Ed Kleinbaum, I mean, I'm afraid we've run out of time here, but I thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Edward Kleinbaum, who's a professor of law at the University of Southern California's Gould School of Law. His work focuses on the taxation of capital income, international tax issues, and the political economy of taxation, including the intersection of tax policy and contemporary politics. Before joining USC Law, he served as chief of staff of the United States Congress's Joint Committee on Taxation, and he has an article in Thursday's New York Times, "The Debt Ceiling's Escape Hatch." We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the Church of Fear, Scientology.
You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. And in the middle of negotiations, you break down.